Taylor here from Greenscore. Just wanted to give you a heads up that I had some audio issues on this episode, so you may find me a little bit muffled or not quite as clear as usual. I really hope that won't distract you from the amazing content of this episode, which is about menstrual products. Really enjoyed this one. Another side note is that we do use the word women throughout this episode. We are using that to also include people who have periods but do not necessarily identify as women. So just wanted to clarify that one point there. Hope you enjoy.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the Green Score. So there's so much negativity out there about climate change. Climate doomism is on the rise, and I know I certainly can go through times of feeling completely powerless, a bit like watching a slow motion car crash, but I'm sat in the car seat. But here we believe at Green Score that we can take back some control. We can take back control of the wheel, so to speak. By having the right information, we can make small changes that will actually really make a difference. And collectively and together, if we all make small changes, the impact will be greater. That's what it's all about for us. This is why we're doing the Green Score. It's about ownership. How can we take control of climate change and actually make a real difference?
Absolutely. So today we are going to be talking about menstrual products, and to talk us through them, we have Elizabeth Dewey, who is co-founder of Mondays. We're really excited to have her. Mondays was founded in 2019. It aims to empower people to make naturally smart choices for better menstrual health, better for both their bodies and for this planet. Mondays makes it easy to switch to plastic-free pads and tampons with an online subscription, and works with organizations to provide employees, students, and fans with sustainable period products. After all, they are an essential, just like toilet paper. So, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us.
Great to be here. Thank you.
So, to kick us off, could you just tell us a little bit about Mondays and what inspired you to set it up?
Yeah, so it was Nancy, my co-founder, who originally told me about plastics in period products a number of years ago. And it frankly shocked me. I obviously knew that there was plastic around the products I was using. That was quite clear to me. But that they were actually using plastic in them just bowled me over. I couldn't get over it. There wasn't much conversation at the time about single-use plastics. I'd say that's really accelerated in the last few years. But it shocked me really from a health invert sort of health aspect that I was putting something so such an intimate part of my body every month, and it was containing plastic. And we effectively went on our separate journeys. And after a while, we had a few conversations, obviously ongoing, and we decided that really things weren't changing, and it wasn't getting any easier to find products that were healthier, that were more sustainable, that were plastic free. And driven by the fact that we looked at this market segment that looked frankly like it had been looking like 30 years ago, 60 years ago, 80 years ago, we decided to take things in our own hand and found Mondays. Really make a product of the product of choice, which is especially tampons and pads, and make a product that women could choose to use that was more sustainable and more environmentally friendly for them and for the planet, as I said. And for us, it's one and the same thing. If you're healthier as a person, you're healthier for the planet too. And the taboo around the subject, I think, has really driven so much of this subject not coming up. I mean, I often talk to people about plastic straws, and I'm like, well, how many plastic straws are you actually really using? Because a woman's using 25 period products on average every month. And the most popular product is actually a tampon applicator. And the impact of that on our environment is huge, but we're not talking about it because it's such a taboo subject. And we really wanted to found Mondays and do a lot of work, like you just said in your introduction, Taylor, which isn't just about the direct consumer conversation, but it's also about this conversation with companies, with organizations, schools, sports facilities, opening up this conversation, starting it, because only then, with that knowledge, will people have a choice and be, like you said, make that little choice that you talked about earlier, Jake, that will make in collective a huge impact for us. So I hope that's a good introduction, short and sweet.
Absolutely. I really love that conversation aspect of your work and really trying to address these taboos because, I mean, I remember when I first got my period, I was just like, you don't want to talk to anyone about it. You feel like it's a scary thing, even though half of the population goes through it at some point. And so really making that a normal part of conversation, being like, hey, it's okay to ask what other products there are out there and try these different things. I think that's such an important part of any type of women's health product. So I'm really glad to hear you have both the product and the more educational side of things.
Yeah, it's not something that we carry around with us. It's not like a coffee cup. It's not like a, you know, where you see someone using a coffee cup and saying, hey, you know, this is a great coffee, it's organic, or, you know, it's very visible. It's something we hide, that we're, it's shrouded in shame and taboo, and so much of the language that we use about it, the word sanitary and hygiene, and is already in itself implying that something is not good about it. And so we don't have mm-hmm. that conversation. And there were some surveys done by quite a big charity in the UK where they questioned about 750 women and or young women, and they all said that the education about periods came far too late. You know, they'd already had their period by the time you actually went into formal education about it. So it's, the conversation has to start earlier and has to be more open. That's why it's super cool that Jake's on this call too, because men have to be involved in this conversation too, right? I mean, it's half the population is dealing with this for half their lives. And the reason we're all here is because we have a healthy period at the end of the day.
Yeah, well, I think one of the interesting things I had, Elizabeth, is when we had a chat before, obviously recording this episode, just to kind of our intro chat we always do with guests, is how open you are with it with me. And I think that's really, I mean, I think I'm hoping that from a generational point of view, I know that my partner Emily's very open about it with me. Her friends are. And I don't know if maybe, hopefully there's a more of a generational shift. You will both know better than me, but I like the fact that it's natural and you weren't, there was no shame in telling me about it. And being a slight more of a modern man, I was kind of used to having that conversation, which I'm guessing from a female perspective, is really important to have males who are open to listening, right?
Yeah, and it's important just for lots of environments as well. I mean, nowadays there are so many single dads and single parents. And, you know, if you can have that open conversation, it will make a world of difference. That first time, as Taylor said, your first period is a day that most women remember, but many of them have never talked to anyone about. And just by knowing that it's a normal, natural, healthy thing that's going to happen to them and they can be prepared, it makes a huge difference. Just like everything in life, your first interview for a job, I mean, if you went in there without any idea of what was about to happen to you, it would be a very terrible experience. But you can prepare yourself, you know, just having a few products at hand, understanding what that means, knowing you can go and talk to somebody. It's very empowering.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess to kind of touch on the context of how big, like how big this is, you know, how many people this affects. Could you just kind of give us a few numbers on like how big the women's health market is?
Yeah, it's a big market. Obviously, as I mentioned earlier, half the population are having the menstruation for half their lives. And in fact, because of contraception, we now experience something like 450 periods in a lifetime versus just a couple of generations ago that perhaps we were experiencing 100 periods. And that's a combination of us having far fewer children, but also the pill, which now you can use as a contraception, but ensures that you have your period on a very regular basis. Obviously, nutrition is a huge factor as well. We have a better nutrition, therefore our bodies are healthier. That as a result, the market is massive. The global feminine hygiene market is supposedly close to $40 billion. It's a huge market and it's been dominated. I think that's something that's really worth talking about. It's been dominated by the same three or four brands for, come on, 80 years, if not longer. It's a supermarket aisle that I would say, I'm not sure about you, Taylor, I don't know how often you've been down it, Jake, but it hasn't changed with the times. You know, you can go and buy tea now and you've got this amazing collection of tea or coffee, you know, all sorts of branding. Aesthetically, they look great. They're organic, they're natural. You've got choice. That has been completely lost in this aisle. And so as a result, I mean, it's, despite it being a huge market, I'd say it's a very badly neglected one. And the same three, four brands that we all know that dominate the market, they do have market share that's close to 80%. if not larger. So it's huge, and so it's very much time to disrupt this and change this and give consumers a choice, effectively. I mean, that's what it is about, conscious choice and saying, okay, I want to change this and I want to choose something that's better for me. Yeah.
Those are huge numbers. I mean, I'd never really thought about, obviously not having periods, I never thought about that, but 400 odd periods in a lifetime is a huge number, isn't it? That's massive. And then such a big market as well. That's 40 odd billion. It's enormous.
I mean, if you're using a disposable product, you're using about 11,000 to 12,000 in a lifetime. And the bulk of the market, is pads and panty liners and tampons. They dominate about 85% of the market. And then you've got alternatives. And obviously in various parts of the world, you have other options. But now you're seeing a resurgence of products that are reusables that have been on the market for many years, but are seeing a resurgence, which is great. They're also, as like all reusables, sustainable as well. So it's been definitely the growth in the market is coming from the organic, just like any other FMCG sector, really, is the organics and the reusables. And I think also what's exciting for us is we've seen a real change in the interest of those buying and purchasing these products. There was very little interest. Even there was a survey done by, I think it was Mintel, and they said that now 15% of people who menstruate are opting for environmentally friendly products. That's a huge change from even like 2010, when you had numbers lower than 5%.
I mean, I think it's really great to see how consumer habits are changing and how that can drive change. I also, just as someone who runs their own small business, I think it's awesome that you're taking on these massive companies. I mean, those sort of monopolies are ripe to be destroyed, aren't they? So I think, or at least broken up. I'm guessing, obviously, as you said, I don't go down those aisles much, although I have more recently since when Emily was pregnant, so I kind of got to know it a little bit. But I'm guessing that the traditional ones, traditional pads and tampons, they're obviously not sustainable. How are they made? How are non-sustainable ones made? And also, what's the kind of, how are they disposed of? What's the impact kind of after use on the environment?
This is a huge subject, right? And I think it's, you know, Taylor, you said you'd done some reading yourself. I think what's the most astonishing fact about this sector is it's not regulated. It's not a medical device in Europe. So there's no regulation or requirement for firms to print any ingredients on their packaging. So unlike anything you eat or wear, actually, or pretty much consume, you have no transparency. So the only knowledge that we have of what's in these products, the sort of market-leading products, is what's been declared. And so there's words that are used, for example, like fragrance or perfume, and that in itself can be a combination of up to 3,000 different unknown, undisclosed chemicals in itself. So I just wanted to say that because I think it's a really important thing to say, that the transparency is simply not there. But what we do know is that pads, which is the largest part of the market, they take about 70% of the market. They are, as I mentioned earlier, not just only packaged, I've got one with me, not only packaged in plastic. If you were with me, you would have to touch it. And it's only then that you realise the difference. And it's amazing and astonishing to me how many women don't spend the time actually comparing what that feels like versus what an organic cotton one looks like and feels like, because the difference is astronomical. This one's up to 90% plastic, the inside of it. I don't know, maybe now the nappy business, you've heard of something called superabsorbent polymers. The chemical name is sodium, I'm going to have to read it, sorry, polyacrylates. They are these superabsorbent polymers. They're in nappies too. It's actually a gel form. They're in here as well. They are known as superabsorbers. They absorb up to 100 times their own weight in water or in fluid, effectively. They're just pure plastic, obviously, but they allow nappies and pads, sanitary products and period pads and to absorb the liquid. Effectively, then you've got a whole combination of polypropylene, you've got polyethylene. They're all in there. And like I mentioned earlier, there is no need for these companies to disclose what's inside their products. Then the tampons, I think, are something else that is worth talking about, because the market leading product is also, again, not just wrapped in plastic, it's also then the applicator. And there was a life cycle analysis that was done by the Technical Institute in Stockholm, and they determined that this is one of the most carbon intensive parts of producing period products, is the backing on these pads, obviously the plastics inside, but also this tampon applicator. And this is what I mean about, we talk about straws. I don't know how many cocktails you drink, but I don't drink that many. I use paper straws now. But as a woman, you're using maybe 20 of these, 15 of these a period. And this is the choice, the product of choice. So the impact is massive. And obviously, as we know, plastics contain parabens, they contain phthalates. Also, they've detected endocrine disruptors in them, which have all sorts of impacts on our reproductive system, growth, development, mood. And yeah, so there's just so many, it's such a huge issue. It's almost overwhelming, I have to say, just because it's such a big subject and it's so unknown. They say one pack of pads like this is the equivalent of 4 or 5 plastic carrier bags, which hopefully we've almost eradicated now. But that's quite astronomical numbers.
That's unbelievable. So just two things though that I thought, so obviously loads of plastic really bad, but also this is maybe a small side point we can just quickly explore. You also just mentioned about the chemicals. Now, if I was putting something with that many unknown fragrances by my penis, I'd be a little bit worried. Is that, as a woman, obviously your vagina is super sensitive and you're putting all of those chemicals that are not listed?
Yeah. And the argument is that the levels used are so insignificant that they're not harmful. But what I would counter on that is that as far as anything I've ever looked at, there is no significant independent research that really quantifies that. I also wanted to ask about environmental impact. I mean, I think it's the numbers on as a bigger factor. And I think we all are part aware of the microplastic conversation. I think what's very concerning about menstrual products is a lot of women flush them down the toilet. And it doesn't matter what your product is made of, it shouldn't go down the toilet. There's only 3 things that should go down, pee, poo and paper. And the rest should be disposed of. It's always a better way. Obviously, if your product is made with plastic, we all know what that means. It's landfill plastics. I mean, I was looking, the UK, for example, they say there are 200,000 tons of menstrual waste that end up in landfill every year. And then you're looking at the other side where people are still flushing the products down the toilet. And they, of course, then end up into our water systems. And then because they have plastic in them, you have this also this effect where they, you know, break down and then ultimately become microplastics, which is now why we're seeing these things, not just obviously from menstrual products, but from Everest to the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, I remember reading that tampons and tampon applicators are actually one of the most commonly found plastic items in the ocean or on beaches, which makes sense. If they're being flushed, they're ending up in waterways and they're not being properly handled. I know that also technically a lot of tampon applicators are recyclable, but recyclers won't take it because it's considered medical waste, which I find kind of ironic now that you've said it's not regulated as a medical product. So you have like this bad thing on both sides of how it's produced and how it's disposed. So I feel like there's just so many issues around these menstrual products that honestly we just don't talk about. And I'm so glad to start hearing these numbers and hearing this information out in the open.
Yeah, I think the applicator is difficult. I think you've talked about this in other podcasts that I listened to earlier. This combination of plastics, I think they're made of polyethylene and polypropylene, a combination usually. I don't know how easy that is to recycle. I don't know how willing someone is to recycle it either after use, considering that the many flush it because of shame, because they don't want to take it to the bin, or there isn't a bin in their toilet at school, or, you know, there's all sorts of issues like that. The impact is huge. I don't know how recycling these products is very difficult anyway, any plastic, yeah. Right? I think that's the reality of it. And then you've got the added problem that it's, like you say, not accepted by many to recycle. So it's doubly hard. But it's, at the end of the day, going back to the plastics in Piri products, ultimately, do we need the plastic in these products? And the answer is no, we don't.
This is where you give us hope. Yeah, this is our
great switch.
This is where we move on to...
Because there is hope.
Taylor, I'll let you lead the switch.
So I guess now that you've brought us to this point, what are Monday's products made of? Like, why are they more eco-friendly?
I think it's important here to state that, we are really believe that first and foremost is information, education, and then choice. This is a really personal product, and it blows me away every time I speak to people and they talk to me about their periods, how varied they are, how different they are, what the experience is like for each and one of us is very different, and we're all got different situations. And I think it's, for me, Mondays is about bringing a product that a lot of women are aware of in and making accessible to them in an easy way. So we have really a product that everyone knows, which is the pad, but we've replaced it with products that we feel are much better for the environment. We know are better for the environment and for the body. So they're made with organic cotton, and the outer wrapping and the backing layer are made of something called Matabee. And the combination of these two products is great because the carbon footprint, therefore, of this is just radically different to something like this. We don't have microplastics. Matabee, for those who don't know, is like a cornstarch-based plastic mixed with vegetable oils. If I were to litter it, which I wouldn't recommend, it is gone within 6 to 9 months completely. That's versus someone littering this, and as you just mentioned, finding on the beach 450 years later. I mean, it's just for something that's being used for a few hours of your life, it's a terrible legacy to leave behind. And so it is a great thing to step forward and say this, because each and time you use one of these, you're making a change that is really important. And organic cotton, it's worth mentioning as well, we're certified, GOTS, which is like the gold standard. I don't know if you know Soil Association, but they have a great website if anyone wants to read up about the benefits of organic cotton versus conventional cotton. But there's no pesticides being used in there. They have, in the sort of crop growing, they use 90% less water. And the whole process is managed under this certification. So it's not just about growing the crops, it's also how the farmers paying their staff, what are the environments the people are working in. It's an amazing sort of like whole socio-environment that's being looked after, which is very powerful. Our tampons, unlike the market leaders, we've got the applicator wrapped in paper, which of course you can recycle. And then the applicator is cardboard. And the tampon itself is 100% organic cotton, again, the string and everything. Unlike your tampon here, which is the Tampox one, this you have a polyester string. You might have cotton in here, but it's conventional cotton. So again, they found traces of pesticides in there. And you've usually got a rayon mix in there as well, which is obviously another very, although it's originally a natural product, it's very chemical and very industrial product. It's quite a process to get to this time, to this sort of product. So the cardboard applicator is also in itself recyclable. I mean, there's no reason why not. I mean, you could wash it and recycle it if you want. But if it goes in the landfill, it just burns or just disappears. Again, there's that. And that will last 450 years, or if you're lucky, you'll find one on the beach this summer. I think we've looked at the carbon footprint of a tampon or a pad, and we reckon that you can lower your carbon footprint by about 35% just by switching to one of these products. And like I say earlier, I think it's about choice, and I've mentioned earlier the reusables, and they're fantastic, but they're not for everybody, and it's about choice, and they're not for every time. And I think it's about talking about it, which is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. It's about finding the option that works for you. Like, I'm really lucky in that I have a very light flow. I almost never need to use products. Like, it's just not necessary for me. But I know for many people that is not the case, and you might not want to have something reusable. You might want something that you can easily dispose on the go. And it's good to have these options that aren't full of plastic, that aren't going to end up in landfill or as litter on the beach for hundreds of years. And what I find really interesting is that, as you were describing the different materials that go into traditional tampons and pads, there's a lot of engineering there. There's a lot of different materials. And then when you talk about yours, it's literally one or two materials. And so I'm kind of like, why did we over-engineer all of this stuff when there was a simpler and more sustainable option? So it's kind of that interesting, that interesting mix.
I think you're absolutely right. And of course, it was driven by margins at the end of the day. Mm. It's an extremely cheap product. Also, it's a sector because of a lot of marketing that's been going on in the last few years or the last decades the marketing has been very much using words. I mean, if you go on the websites, it's all about leak-free and safe and trustworthy, and so there's almost a difficulty for women to move, because obviously this time of the month you want to have a product that you really trust, that's not going to leak, for example, that you know is going to be okay for you. And there is, for some people, still that view that if you move to something that's ecologically friendly or more sustainable, that there's a downgrade in terms of efficacy. And I think that was really important for us, that our products are absolutely, without doubt, great products, and that you can really trust them. And they're made by companies, all, you know, they're made for us here in Europe. We source all our products from, you know, obviously the cotton doesn't come from Europe because that doesn't grow in Europe. But for example, the box and the matter B, that's all been done for us here in Europe as well, by companies that we have great relations with. And, you know, I think that's really important that we can trust the products so that our customers can too, just because of this whole, difficulty for everyone to just go from to brands that they've trusted for years and make that move or introduce their children to a new brand.
Has that been your biggest barrier? And because, you know, kind of your biggest barrier to adoption, has it been a concern that something sustainable means it's not as good, for want of a better phrase, or that those kind of the biggest barriers?
I think the biggest barrier is something I've alluded to earlier, which was the fact that there's a lack of transparency and that we're just not aware of what's in these products. And as a result, we haven't made that choice because we don't know there is a choice or there should be a choice to be made. So unlike so many other subjects, and again that goes back to the fact that it's a taboo subject and so many people don't want to talk about it, and that is changing. You know, the fact that it's in the bathrooms in my local school here now, period products are on offer to the kids at school. It's an amazing thing because it sends out that message that it is as private as going to the toilet, don't get me wrong, but we aren't that embarrassed with somebody walking around the road with a bag of toilet paper. Maybe you don't want to go to the bar with it or something like that, but it is a private matter, but it isn't something that you should be ashamed of. And it does belong there and it is a necessity. And it's got nothing to do with organisation. It's nothing to do, it's a very natural, healthy thing that's happening to you. And you should have the right to know what you're putting in and on your body every month for half your life. And I think that is a huge barrier. I was looking actually just before we were talking, and there's an charity work with called City to Sea in the UK, and they did a recent survey, I always think it's interesting, where 64% of the people they surveyed are still unaware that big brand products contain plastic and not just packaged in it. 64%, that's still a huge number. I think there's a lot of work that still needs to be done. And the other things, of course, longer term, that worry me, and I think is obviously expense. This is obviously buying ecological products is very much a more expensive option. I know with some of the reusables, over a lifetime, they end up being cheaper, but it's a one-off cost that initially a lot of people can't afford. Organic cotton supply is also something that, you know, is something that you could say is not sustainable for a mass market product. I don't worry about so much. I don't think it's so much a barrier. I think as consumers drive and demand change, we will find alternatives and alternative products that we can use. I think that, you know, we'll see those more interest, more money going to research to change and find new materials that would be appropriate.
So you mentioned a couple times those different reusable products that are available. I think for people who maybe do want to switch away from disposables, could you comment briefly on what options there are and any idea on their on kind of their environmental impact?
Yes, I'm absolutely happy to. So Mondays don't sell any reusables, but that's not any reason other than I totally think that they're great, like I said earlier. So you have the menstrual cup, which was actually invented the same year that the tampon was invented in 1934. And I know a few people in my family who used them back in the 70s. And they were quite the fringe product because I think the real issue with them was what they were made of, which was originally rubber. And that caused the latex, for some people, obviously allergic reactions. And now you've got ones that are made out of silicone. The beauty of a menstrual cup is that they are like a tampon in that they are inserted and can stay in for a number of hours, but they collect the blood rather than absorb it. And that you buy it once and you can keep it for a number of years. And the other one that's very much at the forefront at the moment and very cool are the reusable panties. So they're underwear effectively just with a built-in extra absorbent gusset. And they are also, again, fabulous, especially for many, many women for many reasons. And when I say women also, I thought I should say that. I mean it very much in a broader sense of the word because we are very aware. We have a lot of customers who don't identify with them, with the word women, but they menstruate. So yeah, it's important to say. But the wonderful thing about the panties is that there are many people who don't want to use anything that they put inside them for cultural reasons, for medical reasons. They're too young. They've just started their period. I mean, the idea is quite scary. And so the pants are fabulous and you wear them for a number of hours. I mean, some, depending on your flow, they can be something that you can wear for 12 hours, just like your normal underwear. And then you wash them and then you can put them on again. And as always with everything, there's question marks. And I would always say with a menstrual cup that if you can, go find somebody like a pharmacist who can help you with the fitting. It's quite important. Because ultimately you can end up with 8 of them at home and none of them really fit you. And it's not because you're not right for the menstrual cup. It's because the menstrual cup's not right for you. And it's really worth, in my opinion, going to somebody who could help you with that. And with the undies, I would also really be careful about what companies you're buying them from, where they're being made, and what they're being made with. I have to say, I've looked at quite a few. I own a few, and they're also a lot of plastics in some of them, even fragrances in some of them, and so the same things apply. But again, it's a reusable, so it's a great product too. And I go back, I'm super fan of just having a choice, and also it doesn't have to be that once you only use panties, you can combine things. That's the beauty, right? And I think the more you talk about it and acknowledge your flow and track it and understand it, you can say on these days, I like to use this product, on that day, I'll use this product. And, or I'm going traveling now for 3 weeks and you know what, I can't be bothered with all that. I'm going to use this one. Yeah. So that's the beauty of opening this market up to choice.
Yeah. But I think, as you said, it's great to have these choices and not just say you have to go for these standard period products that have been around forever. You know, you can choose what works for you and what works for your flow and what works for your schedule. So it's great to have these options that also enable you to be a bit more eco-conscious.
Yeah, and every bit counts. And if 1 month you feel Like, you can handle that product, be it whatever, a cup, and the next month you can't. There's no point beating yourself up about it.
I'm just, like, super excited about this. Thank you so much for all this information. I've wanted to do this episode pretty much since we started drafting ideas, like, over a year ago. So I'm so glad it's finally happening. And I guess now we can wrap up with our green score. So we'll start with our first one, which is how easy it is for us as consumers to make a sustainable choice about menstrual products. And we're going from the worst, which is black, through to brown. Gray is kind of like our in-between, and it could go either way. And then forest green and lime green is our best. It's the easiest to make decisions. For me, I'm going to say probably a gray here, because it sounds like there are increasingly being some options that are more clear in their labeling, such as yours or such as some of these the reusable cups, but a lot of it is just not clear. Like, a lot of going to the supermarket or the store or whatever and going through this aisle is, you know, it's just the same things you've seen forever, as you've said. So I'm personally gonna go gray. What do you think?
I'll let you go first, Elizabeth, as the expert, obviously.
I must be an optimist. I'm definitely more green. I don't think I'm lime green, definitely not. But I think the fact that we're seeing legislative change coming in the sector means that we haven't just got the push from the consumer, from the grassroots, talking about plastics and all these amazing non-profits raising awareness about it, but we've also seen the subject as a whole being addressed by legislators, you know, with the tampon tax, to bringing things like Michigan. You know, they're not necessarily about the environmental aspect of it, but they're opening up the subject. So I think I'm an optimist, and I think there are ways. If you're the new generation are really pushing for this, and I think the amount of access we have now on social media and podcasts and YouTube, and it's just, we're just getting more educated. And if you want to make that switch, it's not difficult to make that switch.
I like the optimism, Elizabeth. I think I'm going to join you. From what I can understand, like I said, I'm no expert, but it sounds like it's quite obvious to know that the big brands, the ones that you've said have dominated, that probably dominate supermarket shelves, none of them are clearly doing anything very sustainable. So it sounds like if you are able to and have the time, and I appreciate it, and also maybe the money, I appreciate it might be a little bit more expensive, but you can go online, Google, and find companies like Mondays who are actually very clearly coming at it from a sustainable perspective. So I'm gonna go with you, Elizabeth. I'm gonna positive.
As usual, I am the negative one. I'm very sorry.
Yeah. Worryingly, you're the
scientist. We're like yin and yang, which is sad. We're yin and yang.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's just for me as a scientist. You know, I never want to say universally that something is like better or that it's perfect, because there's always going to be a deviation in those numbers. And I always like to see both sides of things, but that comes at the flip side of maybe being a bit too negative about certain things. So I admit to that. Okay, so that was our first one. Our second one is about how much of a wider impact could switching to more sustainable menstrual products have on these big issues like climate change, like ocean pollution. And I... having just said I'm negative, I'm going to go really positive on this one, actually. If I could, I would go between, like, forest and lime green, because... Okay, fine. Jake. Okay, well, you know what? I'm going to go lime green this time, because, as we've said several times, this is impacting half of the world population. By switching to different products, such as Mondays with the organics and the non-plastic, you were saying you're reducing your carbon footprint by about 30%. I know that there's been some studies as well for reusables, like menstrual cups, that say if you use it for something like 8 years, your carbon footprint is about 1.5% of what it would be for all of the period products, disposable ones you would have used over the same period of time.
That's cool.
And also just like reducing waste, reducing all of this pollution that often ends up in the ocean, as we've discussed, when it's being flushed. I really think there's a potential for quite a big impact here.
Elizabeth, you're gonna keep the positive vibes going? Surely, if you're the positive person, it's going to be really positive here.
The question is what the wider impact could be. Is that right? No, okay, yeah. Then I will be on definitely forest green. I think it's worth saying that I suppose my hesitation is that we're in a very big bubble at this part of the world, and that the implications of this around the world, because at the end of the day, we're talking about 50% of the population, regardless of where you live. And it's really about seeing the big brands change and making their side change. I think that's what we really need as well, to be honest, as well, is shaking up the industry as well. But I agree, I think there is a huge momentum right now that I'm very positive about, and I think we'll see change happen. So I'll agree with you.
Well, I'm also going to be super positive. I'm going to go light green. I think there are a couple of things. First of all, you know, I put down roughly 1 year versus 450 years I've written down here, whatever it is. The difference is just unbelievable. I looked at a tampon before we came on. Hadn't really looked at one before, and I was like looking at going, you can't make this with completely natural, organic or sustainable materials, and you can, which is mind-blowing. But also you are right maybe about, you know, kind of where kind of these products are selling is maybe in kind of say Western Europe and America at the moment, I'm guessing, or, you know, kind of more wealthy countries. But as the rest of the world catches up economically, you'd hope that by then companies like yourself, Elizabeth, like Mondays, would have made enough of impact that the whole industry would have changed. I'm sure not all of it, but I really think you're driving change. So and you're one of, as you said, some others doing it. So I think you're driving positive change in something that is going to use, like you said, by 50% of the population, and which you can cut how long it takes to decompose an environment by 449 years. So I'd say that's pretty awesome. So yeah, I'm going to go super positive.
Great.
There we go. As you know, it's so nice to end one of these on a real positive. It is awesome. So yeah, Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming on. I think as I said to you kind of offline, I think Taylor's a sustainability scientist, so this is her field. I come from it from a personal interest. I always love speaking to entrepreneurs and companies that are doing something completely different. I think it's amazing how you've deconstructed something that's made with non-recyclable materials and put everything together, and you've made it easy for your customers to access it. I think that's absolutely brilliant. So yeah, it's absolutely awesome. So thank you very much for coming on. I'm really appreciate your insights on the industry.
Well, I hope it was interesting and factual, and yeah, something that everyone can learn something about. And that's what I always want to hear when I'm listening to a podcast. So I think it's always loved your podcast with, I think one of your first ones, The Scientist, All About Plastics. I learned so much. I wanted to quote her all the time afterwards, and that's why I listen. So it's really nice. So even if someone listens to this and goes to that shelf and goes, okay, I'm not going to buy it this time, I'm going to choose something else, I hope that makes them think about it twice. That'd be really nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah, awesome. Okay, well, look, next episode we have nappies, which obviously is, I've just had a dad, having just become a dad. That's the lack of sleep talking I'm super interested in. Elizabeth, you've already gone through that stage, haven't you? So got very little sympathy from you, didn't I, really, as to where I was. So but yeah, we've got nappies next, so I hope you'll join us for that. Elizabeth, thank you once again for joining us.